WXOJ. There's nowhere better that you can be, so keep it right here on 103.3 FM Northampton.
He's a magic man. This is Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP Northampton, 103.3 FM, streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. You're listening to Out There every Wednesday from 4 to 5. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Today's show is a bunch of little things. The first little section, I have some clips of people that I found out and about who are in the snow, in the cold, doing things this past week. A lot of snow and ice and all that. Also a little clip from Alex Jarrett talking about Snow Squad, and have an interview or a conversation with my friend now about moving to Holyoke, and a conversation with Eli Damon about risk and safety and being safe on the streets. I'm having a little trouble with a computer because there's a new program in it, and that takes me a while to get used to things. But I'll just start with a little clip from Clarissa. Clarissa just showed up to get the trailer to leave on her Pedal People route. Clarissa, can you describe the weather out here this morning?
So it's kind of dreary, gray skies, something frozen falling. Probably about 33 degrees or something.
The ground is covered with snow and ice, but we're both kind of wet. Or at least on the outside. Your helmet's got rain, and the rain is falling. So how do you not just ride a bike, but ride a bike and pull a trailer when the paths and the road conditions are like this?
Slowly. I guess I always say to myself, like, ride at a place and a pace that makes you feel comfortable. So even if that means I'm on my brakes a lot going downhill, I don't want to speed up a lot, then it just means I'm going slowly. And I'm also pushed a little bit more into the road because the edges get especially slippery. So I go, you know, a little to the left, a little more into the road. What else? Oh yeah, studs. So a big thing is that I have studded tires on my bicycle, which means there's little metal points, and they're really, you know, rugged mountain bike tires as well. So that gives me a lot of traction.
Well, good luck and be careful out there. And have fun.
So some other people I talked to this week that were in the cold were some guys that were in the construction dumpster outside of Valley Medical on Main Street in Florence. They were getting some scrap metal out of the dumpster. They were looking for it.
¿Ustedes buscan el metal en cualquier basurero? ¿Dónde lo encuentran?
Sí, le pedimos permiso a los contratistas.
Uh-huh.
Y si nos dan permiso, lo cogemos.
Okay. Sí, es mi compañero de casa que está aquí, vive en North Maple, donde ustedes estaban con el bathtub.
Okay.
¿Dónde llevan el metal?
A Julio, a Sullivan.
A Sullivan.
Yeah.
¿Y pueden ganar la vida o un poco de extra dinero?
Poco.
¿Pero paga por el gas del troque?
A veces, ayer no hicimos nada.
Ajá.
Hay días buenos, hay días malos.
Ajá.
So I was asking them, do you get permission to get the scrap metal, or how do you get it? They said they talk with the contractors and see if they can get in the dumpster. I had seen them earlier in the day. I was riding my bike through Florence. It was like 4 degrees, and I had seen them at my housemate works on a house. He's rehabbing a house on North Maple Street, and I'd seen them loading this bathtub in the back of their pickup truck, this clawfoot bathtub. It looked like it took a lot of effort. And then they passed me, and then I passed them again. So I stopped and I pulled over when I saw them in the rollaway dumpster outside of Valley Medical. And so I was asking them, like, where do you take it? They take it to Sullivan Scrap Metal in Holyoke. And I asked them if they're able to make a living. And they said, oh, it kind of depends, mostly just a little extra money.
In winter, it's bad.
Yeah. ¿Por qué?
Por el frío, por la nieve.
Yeah, para ustedes.
Para nosotros. Yeah, y la gente no saca muchas cosas.
Yeah, Sí, porque el construction no está tan busy.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Frío.
Sí, sí, sí.
Frío. Y how are you? What are you guys doing? The pedal? That for the city?
No, actually, la municipalidad no recoge basura aquí. Todo es privado.
So I was out doing my pedal people route, and it was cold, but for me, I'm just touching plastic with thick mittens on, mostly plastic, some glass, a little bit of metal, not much, but these guys were touching solid steel and metal with these thin work gloves on, so I felt like I had it pretty easy. This next clip is from my housemate Alex Jarrett talking about the Snow Squad.
Alex, do you have a minute to tell me about what Snow Squad is as you're washing dishes?
The Snow Squad is a website that is designed to help people keep track of the conditions of the rail trails and other pedestrian bicycle connections in Northampton. And then also, if there's people who want to help out, either by clearing certain key connections, things that aren't cleared by the Public Works Department, they can mobilize themselves to do that. And then also the Snow Squad has a goal of helping out or advocating for better services for pedestrian and bike with regard to snow removal especially.
If someone wants to volunteer to help out, how do they get involved?
Well, they can just look at the map that's on the website and see the various conditions. They can update those conditions or send in new conditions. They can look at the map and say, oh, that area, that connector from, say, Adair Place to the bike path isn't clear, and they could just go there themselves and clear it. Actually, I think that one is clear because there's someone who's taken it upon themselves to keep that clear. But the Jackson Street ramp that goes from Jackson Street down to the rail trail in Northampton is often not cleared.
Mm-hmm. Also, the connector from State Street towards Stop and Shop. What's the website?
Snowsquad.org.
How'd you get the idea for this?
Well, I think it was my friend Joe Edelman had created something called Ground Crew, which has since gone defunct, but its goal was to have people be able to map things and help out, be able to post things that need doing and have other people do them and have that be on a map. And so I guess I decided, well, let's try that. I also often would take it upon myself to try to clear things, and my friends would too, that needed to be cleared. So I thought, well, let's get more organized about this.
I've heard the phrase a snow squad mission. What's that?
Well, that's where we decide that it's time to ask a bunch of people to get together and take on some bigger piece of shoveling that would be difficult by yourself, but if there was a whole group of people out there, it would become fun. In the past, sometimes there've been cases where there were sections of the bike path that were just sheets of ice, but it was a really warm day, and so we were able to just run down it with ice breakers and just clear a path wide enough to pedal.
So people can sign up, they'll get a text when someone calls a mission?
Yep. They can sign up. I think they don't even have to have texting. They could even call in, too. And it will you will get a phone call when there's a mission.
And anyone can call a mission, right? Or no?
Anyone can call a mission, but I organize it. So, you would say, I want to do a mission, and then I would send it out for you.
Okay, because you're the website administrator or something like that?
Yeah, at this point, I don't want it to just be open to anyone calling a mission, anyone getting, I'd like there to be some level of, okay, this is a real mission.
Otherwise, anyone could have everyone be texted anytime?
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
That was Alex Jarrett talking about Snow Squad, a website that he created. Of course, anyone can shovel whatever needs shoveled at any time.
Snow Squad, baby. What do you got to say for yourself?
Snow Squad? And while I'm one of the charter members of Snow Squad.
Having completed some fine work connecting Stop and Shop to State Street for pedestrians, baby strollers, and wheelchairs,
bicyclists,
bike trailers. Thank you, Snow Squad, sir. It's like 9 o'clock at night in January and it's dark and it was freezing rain and snow and slush last night, this morning.
Wait a minute. I didn't want to play that yet. oh, where was that? Oh, yeah. Talking about Snow Squad and the rail trail. I want to say thanks to the DPW for plowing the rail trail. Now that the bid isn't, now the bid is defunct, the stretch of rail trail from Taco Bell down to the Main Street Bridge is no longer being plowed. And I missed that, but last I knew, it is being plowed from the Main Street Bridge to Pleasant Street to like the bus station and down to Veterans Park. And it's also plowed from Acme Auto by Stop and Shop up to, I don't know if it's Look Park or I think up to Leeds Elementary School. Anyway, you can go to the Snow Squad website, and Alex tries to keep that updated. And there are people who do things to shovel little sections, and sometimes I have an idea who they are, and sometimes I don't know who they are. I noticed that someone on Monday, the stretch of trail from the Felt Building or like near Veterans Field to the South Street Bridge, someone had pushed through the slush just like a little shovel's width. Where they hadn't pushed through, there was like an inch or two of slush. So that was kind of cool. And then I've also heard of someone who's wobbling part of the path from Bates out to the Hadley Line, a wobble. Well, if you've never heard of a wobble, I never had either, but it's this shoveling path-clearing tool that's a giant wheel. Let's see. A wheel like maybe 3 feet in diameter, and then it's got a shovel, a plastic shovel, plow kind of shovel attached to the front of it, just like a snow shovel. And then you push on the one wheel, and you it's kind of like putting a wheel onto your snow shovel. And what else? I really appreciate the plowing of the rail trail because it's a continuous bike ped way to get from one place to another as compared to the sidewalks, especially like for pedestrians, for like people in wheeled things, whether it's electric scooters or trikes or kick scooters, skateboards, all those kinds of things. It's just really nice to have a continuous pedestrian way to get from between Florence and Northampton. And I would like to see someday the sidewalks be plowed by the public works or a public entity the same way the streets are. And some cities, the cities do that in Burlington, Vermont, for example. And I know there's others, but I'm not sure what they are. So here's another little clip from some friends of mine that I ran into on a dark, snowy night on the rail trail. This is Dennis and Kaylin.
It's like 9 o'clock at night in January, and it's dark, and it was freezing rain and snow and slush last night, this morning. How is it biking up this, carrying groceries?
Not bad at all. It's actually very intriguing. It's not slippery. As long as you go at a steady pace, you'll do fine.
How's it feel, Kaylin?
A little bit scary.
Because it's so long, right?
Yeah.
But if you keep it at a steady pace, you'll do all right.
And how is it with the groceries or the bag on your handlebars?
It's not that heavy.
That's good. Well.
So I wanted to play a song about, I think this song is about shoveling snow. According to the internet, this song is about shoveling snow.
Sa sa sweet, sa sa sweet, sa sa sweet, sa sa sweet, sa sa sweet.
This is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Thanks for tuning in today. I want to make a couple of announcements about some events coming up. This coming Monday is Martin Luther King Day, and Western Mass AFSC is organizing some things, some events on that day. I'm a little distracted by trying to tell the computer to be quiet. Sorry. So this coming Monday, AFSC is organizing the 30th annual celebration of Martin Luther King Day. And there's four events in Northampton and Florence that are open to the public. At 9 o'clock is the Sojourner Truth walking tour in Florence. Meet at the Sojourner Truth statue on Pine and Park Streets. And then at 10:30 is the Martin Luther King Children's Program at Florence Community Center. That's 140 Pine Street. That's at 10:30. And then at 2 o'clock, there's a convocation with a panel entitled Can Ferguson Happen Here? And that's at Edwards Church in downtown Northampton. And the last event is at 4 o'clock. There's a reception and vigil at the UU Church downtown, 220 Main Street. So if you can come out for any of the MLK Day events this Monday, that'd be great. Something else is Winter Fair, Saturday, January 17th at Smith Folk. CESA is collaborating, CESA, Community Involved in Sustaining Agriculture, is collaborating with the regular winter farmers markets in Greenfield, Northampton, Amherst, and Springfield to highlight the bounty of local food available in the deep of winter with a special day of workshops, a food swap, music, and fun. So Northampton Winter Fair is this Saturday, the 17th, at Smith Folk in Amherst and Springfield. It's on Saturday, January 24th. And then in Greenfield, Winter Fair is on February 21st. The next clip I have is... So, my friend now has moved to Holyoke after living in Northampton for a while. Anyway, I'll let her tell her story a little bit more.
Rising, actually, there's a one big sign. Holyoke is rising, actually. There's a one big sign on an old factory building in Holyoke. Someone wrote, Holyoke is rising. And...
So I'm out on a snowy walk with my friend Now in the meadows. And Now just moved to Holyoke a couple weeks ago and bought a house after renting in Northampton for like 5 years?
6 years.
6 years.
Yes.
What led to your decision?
I wanted to live with more people in the future. And I also wanted to get to know people other than my usual friends or people who I usually see. So I decided to move to Holyoke.
When you say live with more people, you mean like in a bigger city or in a house?
In a house, I mean, I was hoping that I will have my parents sometimes living with me and also have some roommates or make family.
What have been some of your challenges moving, especially in the first couple of weeks?
of course, packing and unpacking, and also I usually took bus from Academy of Music in Northampton, and the bus driver knows me very well, so he always waited for me, even if I'm like 1 minute, 2 minutes, sometimes 3 minutes late. But now, because I'm taking a new bus route, the bus drivers don't know me, and I don't even know their name, and they don't wait for me, and I missed 3 buses total this week. 2 buses yesterday, and then last Tuesday I missed a bus, but then I was able to walk to the work.
Oh, because before you lived in Northampton and worked in Holyoke, and now you live in Holyoke and work in Holyoke.
Yes, yes, that's one great thing. If I miss a bus, I have an option to walk, but not yesterday. It was freezing.
How about any challenges with the house as a new homeowner?
Yes, I got to experience fast frozen pipe yesterday. And I used a hairdryer to warm up the under the sink. And finally, it started running water. No busting, yes, thanks, God. Yeah, yes, yes. But I already have a number for plumbers, people recommend. That was a great lesson. And I also miss my old laundromat. That's where I met the people in my neighborhood. So now that I have my own washer, I won't be able to use. But I actually had a few times my family went to the laundromat nearby and they got to know Holyoke.
So your family came to help you move?
Yes, they are the regular mover for me.
You were telling me before that's a family tradition that you help your brother help each other move.
Yes, that's my family tradition, yes. Yes, and then it's also the family tradition that whoever helping move always get to use the bathroom first.
So what are some of the things you're doing in your new neighborhood to get a sense of place in your community?
We try to be outside and meet people.
You had told me earlier in the fall, going into this decision, some of your feelings and desires about like trying to live and work in the same place in terms of like, your money and your investment in the community.
Yes.
Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Yes, I have been working in Holyoke, but then I'm living in Northampton. So I felt like the money is circulating out of Holyoke. I'm making money in Holyoke and I spend money in Northampton. So I wanted to be a part of Holyoke where I can return what I made to back to the community. So that's one of the reasons why I chose Holyoke. Because for last 6 years, I had this thing in my chest that something is not right, that I feel like I was taking advantage of that community and making money and spending nice, comfortable life in Northampton. So I decided to live in Holyoke. And also there was one incident happened right before I made this decision that I was in an argument with one woman who lives in Holyoke, and she called me a racist. And I just wanted to challenge myself. So that's one of the reasons, too, that I decided to move to Holyoke. I wanted to see if I can be really a part of a community, not just a person who makes money there and come back outside of the community.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. What things about moving to Holyoke do you think will be hard for you to adjust to?
Oh, definitely distance from my friends. That's before my friend can stop by at my house. Right now, you have to take a bus. Maybe you have to transfer. So they will have two buses. Or if you want to, you can bring your bike. But it's far from my friends.
How about nature?
Nature, yes, because there's one tree I really loved. Well, all the trees in Northampton, but one particular tree I have this attachment. And I won't be able to see that tree anymore unless I come to Northampton. The place I live, not so much trees as much as I used to. And there are many cars. I'm glad I made this change.
Anything else you'd like to add about or share about this transition?
Northampton is great. And Holyoke is great too. So it's Springfield and everywhere. I guess having a house wasn't really a goal. I think it's more like being a part of a community was my goal. Taking more responsibility as a member of a community, that was my goal. So I think any city you live in, you can be part of a community.
That was my friend talking about her transition to Holyoke. She had a couple other comments about her move.
So I also want to appreciate Craig De La Pena specifically, because he helped me a lot, not just to buy a house, but taught me about how to become a homeowner and, you know, how to look for a house. And also, he even told me that he does bike tour in Holyoke, and he reassured me that Holyoke is a good community and there will be opportunity for me to bike. So I have to appreciate Craig. He's a Holyoke native. He wrote a book about Holyoke too.
How does it feel to have a daughter who lives in another country so far away?
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It hasn't been so long since she was here. So it's okay.
I'm going to quit to my job. So I will come here a long time. So it's okay. Yeah.
To stay for
I can
longer
stay
period.
Here.
That was a conversation I had with Nau's parents while they were here helping her move. I have a couple of other announcements about things going on. There's going to be a presentation and book signing at the Northampton Council on Aging and Senior Center on Conn Street on Thursday, January 15th. That's tomorrow at 2 p.m. It's free for seniors age 55 and older. Join the Northampton Senior Center in welcoming Cynthia Kassoff-Henry as she opens the avenues of communication to all of us, inviting the hard questions about pain management, food, nutrition, and focusing on the patient's needs and wishes. Cynthia will present her book, A Guide to a More Peaceful Death, and be available to autograph the book as well. That's at the Senior Center tomorrow at 2. Also, the Holyoke Career Closet is seeking donations of professional clothing in its mission to provide folks in need with the attire needed for job interviews. This is an ongoing effort. Gently used and new professional men's and women's clothing, such as suits, blazers, blouses, collared shirts, pants, skirts, sweaters, and dress coats are sought. Plus accessories like ties and belts, shoes of all sizes, new men's socks, and women's pantyhose also will be accepted. The Career Closet is a collaboration between Providence Ministries Service Network and Holyoke Community College. Professional clothing donations may be brought to Providence Ministries Service Network at 51 Hamilton Street, Holyoke, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. If you've got any extra nice clothes to donate, and Holyoke is somewhere that you go often, think about dropping them off there on Hamilton Street. You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP Northampton, 103.3 FM, streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. at 5 o'clock, Democracy Now! Is up. You can also hear past editions of Out There online at weatherbeard.com/Ruthie. Ruthie with a Y. Thanks to Alex for helping me out with that. The next interview, well, it's not really an interview. So next I have a conversation with Eli Damon. It's about 17 minutes long. We were talking at the bike lab on Saturday. Eli is a mathematician as well as the cyclist. So we were talking a bit about risk.
Risk is something that is really hard for a lot of people to wrap their minds around. And what tends to happen is that the more direct and dramatic kinds of things, we inflate the risk, and the more indirect and more subtle things we kind of underestimate or underappreciate. For example, lots of people are all freaked out about terrorism, but the number of people who died in the 9/11 attacks is about 3,000. But, for example, the number of people who die every year in car crashes is 30,000. So that's like 10 World Trade Center attacks every year, and people are really kind of nonchalant about that because it's not like this one dramatic event and people sort of feel like they have control over how they drive. And
could you also say that things that people do on an everyday basis that they feel like they have to do one way or the other just to survive, they don't worry about the risk?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I think people think that people have options, they see their options, and certain choices they make on a daily basis. And
yeah,
if they're in a situation where they don't feel like they have options, then they just accept the risk as a fact of life.
Right, so sometimes people don't consider the risk because they don't feel like there's any choice they have to make.
Like, I think that people might feel that way about driving. Or why do you think people so readily accept the risk of driving?
That's a kind of difficult psychology there. I'm not really sure.
Off the top of your head, can you compare risks of driving versus biking?
Yeah, well, so from what I've heard, there's two major ways that the danger of driving is measured, and that's either deaths per hour or deaths per mile. There are arguments on either side of which one is better, but regardless, they both tend to show that the danger of driving a car and the danger of driving a bike are about the same. And of course, that doesn't really give you the true danger because neither of those gives you the true danger because they both sort of take an average over everyone's behavior. So they don't take into account that different behavior gives you different degrees of safety or danger.
So as a cyclist, I'm curious to compare cyclist accidents related to cyclist behavior versus motorist accidents related to motorist behavior. Because I feel like the risk of cycling is greatly inflated by certain types of unsafe cycling behavior. Like, how inflated or how skewed is the risk of driving based on individual driver behavior?
That's a good question. I don't think we have much data about that. Definitely, as a cycling instructor, I know the kinds of mistakes that people make and how many of the crashes can be associated with those mistakes from the cyclists. And pretty much almost every bicycle crash that's measured in any of the high quality studies that we have can be associated with sometimes it's the cyclist doing something that's wrong, and sometimes it's just the cyclist not doing what they could have, where the cyclist could have done something to prevent the crash and didn't, even though they're not obligated to do that. With driving a car, it's probably the same thing. I think that driver's ed teaches that as well, that any car-on-car crash could be prevented by either party. But I'm not familiar with any numbers about that. Although I have heard about some crazy kinds of crashes between cars. This is just anecdotal, so you can't really take it for granted. But for instance, I was at a meeting and this one woman came into the meeting late and she said, "Sorry, I'm late. I got rear-ended." She was driving her car. She was coming off the highway and she stopped at the end of the ramp to yield to traffic on the street. And someone else came speeding, you know, around a curve on the ramp and just ran right into the back of her. She said, the police officer said that happens every day. That kind of suggests that as a motorist, you are vulnerable to the recklessness of other motorists. As a cyclist, I find that that's not as true for me as a cyclist. But as I said, it's just anecdotal. I can't really say anything for certain about it.
Yeah, I feel like anecdotally, I feel more in control as a cyclist because I'm going not as fast and I don't have as much inertia and weight behind me.
Yeah, except a motorist doesn't have to go as fast as they do, but I guess there's more of a temptation when you're driving a car to go too fast.
I thought you were going to say that because I'm smaller, have less inertia, I'm more likely to get creamed.
If you're hit by a car, you're probably going to get hurt more if you are not in a car than if you are. But that's only one factor in a whole complex of factors that determine your risk.
Yeah, do you know what percentage of cyclist crashes don't involve motor vehicles at all?
Oh, yeah. According to the Orlando study is the most recent high-quality study. In that one, 18% of bike crashes involved a motor vehicle, and the other, what would it be, 82% did not.
Do you know how they defined crash?
I guess it would have to be a serious enough crash to involve some official reporting, but I can't tell you for sure. It might have been crashes that were reported to the police or crashes that involved a hospital visit. That's two typical ways of looking for crash data, but I don't know for sure.
From your experience as a cyclist, what kinds of crashes have you personally been involved in? And did they involve other motor vehicles? Were they just your bike? How related were they to your behavior and things that you could have done differently? How much was it completely out of your control?
Crashes that I've been in personally. I was in a number of crashes before I really learned how to drive a bike properly. And all of them, I can say, were because I did something dumb. In one case, I was riding at night without a headlight. I had a taillight. I didn't have a headlight. I assumed, you know, well, I'll just yield to everyone and I'll be okay. But what happened is I came to a side street where the traffic on the side street had a stop sign, and I stopped. A motorist stopped at the stop sign, and then I assumed they were stopping for me, and I thought, oh, I can go now, right? But they didn't see me. They were just stopping because of the stop sign, and they ran into me. Another one, you know, I was riding really close to the edge. I hit a patch of sand, which is the kind of thing you find at the edge of a road, and I slipped on the sand. Or in another case, you know, I was riding on the edge of the road and I hit a pothole, which is where you normally find potholes, right at the edge of the road. And there's one case where I slipped on some ice, which again was kind of dumb because I knew it was icy out, and I actually had studded tires, but I didn't want to use that bike because I was going a long distance. I wanted to use my faster bike. I have been in a couple of other bike crashes with motor vehicles. There was one where I stopped at a stop sign, motorist stopped behind me, a gap opened up in traffic, and the motorist started moving like I wasn't there in front of him. But that was really a no damage or injury at all in that one. And I was rear-ended at a higher speed once also. That driver was later arrested for smuggling hashish, so I kind of have a suspicion about why he didn't see me right in front of him. That was not nearly the worst, you know, the most severe crash I've been in, though. You know, even though it's like the one that everyone is afraid of being rear-ended, but actually that was one of the less severe crashes.
In terms of a cyclist getting rear-ended, do you think it matters if they're in the middle of the lane or on the shoulder?
in general, the more in line with other traffic you are, the less risk there is of having someone hit you from behind because you're where they're looking. There's this kind of myth that you can sort of be out of the way if you stay at the edge. And I think that's a myth. I think you can't really be out of the way, and your best bet is to be where people are looking.
How big of a risk is the rear ending? Talking about people's fears and risks and statistics. Right.
For a cyclist, being rear-ended by a motorist is kind of the scariest thing for most people because you can't see it. You feel like you really have no control over whether it happens or not. And so that really inflates the risk in people's mind. In reality, it's extremely rare. The probability is negligible, even though, of course, it does happen. As I said, it happened to me. But if you compare it to other crashes, it's negligible. Almost all crashes between a car and a bike happen when the two are crossing paths at an intersection or a driveway. A factor that can contribute to a car and bike rear-end crash is the cyclist riding at night without a taillight.
Yeah. Most of the being hit from behind crashes involve the driver being under the influence, too, from what I've heard. But, I mean, that's always a risk. It's always a reality that you have to deal with.
There are a few crashes that there's really nothing you can do about as an individual cyclist, you know, out on the road. But that's a very tiny amount. And if you just worry about the things that you can control, then the things you can't control are not such a big deal. There are two problems with car on bike crashes, right? There's the safety problem, which the cyclist can take care of with their behavior. They can increase their safety to a level where it's more safe than other things that they just take for granted.
Like what?
Like taking a shower, for example, or walking up and down stairs, right? Things like that. Then there's the justice problem. When there is a car on bike crash, the motorist is almost never held accountable. And that makes it scarier to think about the possibility of being hit by a car, knowing that if you're hit by a car, you're not going to get justice. And I think that's a serious problem, but it has to really be kept separate from the safety problem.
Why do you think motorists tend to not be cited when there's car bike crashes?
Because we have this attitude that driving a car is the normal, respectable thing to do, and it's taken for granted, and we just assume that the danger of a crash is just, that's just expected, and you asked for it just by getting on the road. But there's this kind of culture where we just take reckless driving for granted, which is actually something that was kind of deliberately implanted in us, that culture, by the auto industry in their campaign in the 1920s. Before that, there was a lot of hatred of cars for the carnage that they were causing. It was generally considered that the streets belonged to people, that the streets were a place where kids should be able to play, where you should be able to walk out in the street and talk to people or sell stuff off of a cart or whatever. And the auto industry realized that that was really limiting their ability to sell cars because you couldn't go very fast in them with all these people around. And they launched this very intensive campaign to change the culture and teach people that the roads belong to cars, that no one belongs on the road unless they're in a car. And if you get hit by a car, it's your fault just for being there where a car could be.
How have you found out about this? Where is this information available?
This isn't a book that I admit that I haven't actually read, but I've read little bits of it and heard about it. It's called Fighting Traffic by Peter Norton. So, Ruthie, what have you been in any crashes?
Well, we're going to stop right there. I will answer that question from Eli in a little bit. But I have a song that was a request by Eli. This is Tim Minchin.
Yeah, yeah, if I didn't have you. If I didn't have you to hold me tight. If I didn't have you to lie with that night. If I didn't have you to share my sighs. time to kiss me and dry my tears when I cry. Will I really think that I would have somebody else if I didn't have you? Someone else would do. Your love is one in a million. You couldn't buy it at any price. But of the 9.999,000 other possible loves, statistically some of them would be equally nice. Or maybe not as nice, but say smarter than you, or dumber but better at sport, or tracing. I'm just saying I probably
have somebody else.
Yeah.
If I didn't have you, someone else would do.
Someone else would try.
And look, I'm not undervaluing what we've got when I say that given the role chaos inevitably plays and the inherently flawed notion of fate, it's abstruse to deduce I found my soulmate at the age of 17. It's just mathematically unlikely that at a university in Perth I happen to stumble on the one girl on earth specifically designed for me. And if I may conjecture a further objection, love has nothing to do with destined perfection. The connection is strengthened, the affection simply grows over time, like a flower or a mushroom or a guinea pig or a vine or a sponge or bigotry or a banana. And love is made more powerful by the ongoing drama of shared experience and the synergy of a kind of symbiotic empathy or something. So I trust it goes without saying that I would feel really very sad if tomorrow you were to fall off something high or catch something bad. But I'm just saying, I don't think you're special. I mean, I think you're special, but you fall within a bell curve. I mean, I'm just saying,
I think that I would
probably
have somebody else.
I mean, I reckon it's pretty likely that if, for example, my first girlfriend Jackie hadn't dumped me after I kissed Winston's ex-girlfriend Nia back at Steph's party in 1993, enough variables would probably have been altered by the absence of that event to have meant the advent of a tangential narrative in which we don't meet. Which is to say, there exists a theoretical, hypothetical, parallel life where what is not as is, and I'm not your husband and you are not my wife. And I am a stuntman living in LA, married to a small blonde Portuguese skier who, when she's not training, does abstract painting, practices yoga and brews her own beer, and really likes making home movies and suffers neck down alopecia. But with all my heart and all my mind, I know one thing is true. I have just one life and just one love, and my love, that love is you. And if it wasn't for you, baby,
I really think that I would
probably
have somebody else.
Yeah.
If I didn't have you,
if I didn't have you,
someone else would surely,
someone else would surely
do.
That was Tim Minchin with If I Didn't Have You. You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP. At 5 o'clock, there'll be Democracy Now! Coming up. And then at 6 o'clock,
we have Alternatively Speaking with Dr. Saskia Cote. Hi, Ruthie. Thanks for inviting me in. And we have two guests today. We have Shannon Lamoureux and Laura Fetko. Both of them just graduated from massage school, and they're going to come and talk to us about massage and fun. And that will be really a fun live show. So that will be live for you right here at WXOJ.
Thanks for coming in early. So that's at 6 o'clock.
Six to seven. And we have a live meditation.
That's from 6 to 7, and there's live meditation. So I'm going to finish the interview with Eli Damon.
I've never been in a serious crash. I have been in a number of bike-only crashes that were my fault, going too fast for the circumstances. Riding with one hand while I whistled with the other hand and hit a cable in a parking garage and then the bollard. But the only car bike crash I've been in was when I was living in Chicago and I was riding around dusk on a drizzly evening and I had no lights and I was going straight through an intersection and a motorist turning left turned into me. But I was really lucky, and that was a good lesson for me to be more visible. Yeah, that was probably about 1995. I haven't had an encounter with a motorist since then that I can remember, or not a physical encounter.
Right.
So another thing that came up in the conversation that didn't get into the clip was talking about how when you're a cyclist or motorist, sometimes you have to look for things that you can't see. And a friend of mine gave an example of that, especially in unconventional places like parking lots.
Right. That actually reminds me of something that people who drive cars tell me when they're trying to justify speeding, because what they say is, well, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. There's no reason I can't go faster because I can see that there's nothing in front of me. But the whole idea of why you need to moderate your speed is because you don't know what's there.
Yeah, that reminds me of another bike crash that I had. This is also in Chicago. But this was, I was trying to get home as fast as I could, and I bore right onto the side street that my house was on. Mm-hmm. And right as I turned onto the street, it was next to this grammar school, and the six-year-old boy sprinted across the street, and we collided.
Oh, man.
And he was, like, lying down and crying, and his brother helped him over to the curb. And I stopped, and my front wheel was bent, and his brother started cussing me out. And I was like, are you okay? Are you okay? And he had a bruised knee. His leg was bruised, but he was pretty much okay. But, again, I was going fast. I didn't see anything, but you can't foresee when a little kid's going to run out in front of your mm-hmm. path, mm-hmm. or, you know, what I viewed as my path.
There was one time when I was coming down a hill, and this little boy sort of wandered out into the street. Fortunately, I was able to stop before I got to him, and it reinforced the value of the techniques that I had learned in the bicycle safety techniques, because first of all, I used the quick stop technique, and so I was able to stop in a fairly short distance. And the other thing is that I was far away from the edge, which means that once he walked out into the street, I had several seconds before he was directly in front of me in order to react.
So what are some tips for stopping a bicycle as quickly as possible?
Okay, so the way to stop a bicycle quickly without flipping over, you have to use both brakes, front and rear, although the rear brake doesn't actually do very much. It doesn't give you much braking power, but it gives you kind of a signal about, you know, how much traction you have. It's kind of hard for me to explain on the spot, but use both brakes, and you move your weight back as far as you can. Move entirely behind the saddle if you can do that.
And why does the front brake have so much more braking power?
As you put on the brakes, your vehicle will lean forward and the rear will lift up a little bit. And it might not lift up enough so that there's actually a gap between the wheel and the street, but the weight will shift forward and there will be a lot of weight on the front and not so much weight on the back. It's a lot easier when we're out in a parking lot with bikes and we can try it out and practice it.
That was a conversation with Eli Damon, who's a local cycling savvy instructor, and as well as cyclist and mathematician and other things. This is Out There. We have a few minutes left before Democracy Now! Comes up at 5. Something else that I wanted to mention earlier, I was talking about snow, shoveling snow and clearing pathways. And I was having a conversation with Ed Russell earlier this week about how we don't see many people in wheelchairs or walkers out on the sidewalks, but that's because it's so difficult and frustrating, and they don't go out, and so then people forget that they exist and that we need to clear a path wide enough for many different kinds of users. So we're going to close with a song about the fox. I think about the fox. The fox is at night on these winter nights. It's a song by Peter, Paul, and Mary, but this version is sung by Nickel Creek. Again, thanks for listening to Out There, and stay tuned for Democracy Now! Up at 5 o'clock.
The fox went out on a chilly night. He prayed for the moon to give him light, for in many a mile to go that night before he reached a town. Oh, town, oh, town, oh, in many a mile to go that night before he reached a town. Oh, he ran till he came to the farmer's pen. The ducks and the geese were kept therein. He said, a couple of you are gonna grease my chin before I leave this town. Oh, town, oh, town, oh, a couple of you are gonna grease my chin before I leave this town. Oh. By the neck, he threw a duck across his back, and he didn't mind the quack, quack, and the legs all dangling down, oh, down, oh, down, oh, he didn't mind the quack, quack, and the legs all dangling down, oh. Well, the old gray woman jumped out of bed, out of the window she popped her head, crying, John, John, the great goose is gone, the fox is on the town, oh, town, oh, down, oh, John, John, the great goose is gone, and the fox is on the town, oh. Till he came to his nice warm den, and there were the little ones, 8, 9, 10, saying, Daddy, Daddy, better go back again. It must be a mighty fine town, oh, town, oh, town, oh, Daddy, Daddy, go back again, for it must be a mighty fine town, oh. The fox and his wife, without any strife, they cut up the goose with a fork and a knife, and they never had such a supper in their life, and the little bones chewed on the bones, oh, bones, oh, bones, oh, they never had such a supper in their life, and the little